We will find out this hour how we can be more influential. We will talk with the co-authors of the new book, Compelling People, The Hidden Qualities That Make Us Influential. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on this Thursday, October the 10th. We will find out the two qualities that determine how people judge us. We will talk about the best strategies to get someone to agree with us. We'll also talk about the most powerful phrase in politics and much more when we talk about how to influence people. And we'll welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is there someone in your life who has a lot of influence? What makes someone influential, do you think? Do you consider yourself an influential person? We welcome your stories, your questions, your examples for our guests. And we are happy to have with us the co-authors of Compelling People. They are Matthew Kohut. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also John Neffinger. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
They are co-founders of KNP Communications, which specializes in preparing speakers for high-stakes audiences. So, What do you mean by compelling people? What's a compelling person?
Well, the idea behind compelling people, the basic concept of this, is that there are some people who, for reasons that are hard to put our finger on, just seem more interesting, more fun to be around, more magnetic, you know. And actually, our language has this long history of kind of funny terms for this, if you will. So magnetic is one, like as if there was some kind of physical, you know, force that was pulling you towards them. If you go all the way back to the ancient Greeks, they came up with this idea of the divine gift, that some people just had this divine gift about them, this thing that the gods had blessed them with. And that's where we get the word charisma from the Greek word for that. And then, you know, today in show business, you talk about, you know, they've got it. There's this phrase in showbiz that person has it, and it's just this thing, and they have it, and we don't know exactly what it is, but we do. We know in our guts that it's this special thing. And so what we set out to do, well, actually, kind of what we set out to do is we set out to make people more effective and compelling when they're in front of the room giving a presentation, because both of us were speechwriters ourselves. And we were kind of tired of writing things that we thought looked spectacular on the page and then having somebody get up and deliver them and have it be kind of eh. And we thought, well, gee, you know what, there's gotta be a way to get them to do a little bit better than that. So we were trying to figure out how to make that happen and try to make some sense of that.
So why would people want to be compelling?
Well, there are all kinds of reasons that it would be useful to be compelling. First and foremost is the effect that John was just talking about, this idea that somebody just grabs our attention in a way, and it seems like they're speaking right to us. You know, the person who's probably best known for having this quality, you know, in American culture at least, is Bill Clinton. Anyone who has been in a room with Bill Clinton has had this experience of feeling like he was talking to them personally. And, I mean, he was talking to them personally, but they were the only person in the room, the only person in the universe, when he shared his attention with them. And that idea that you can share your attention with someone with such a force of character that people feel like they've really connected with you makes them much more interested in you, and they want to hear what you have to say, essentially.
Do you either have it or you don't? Is this an innate quality, something that Bill Clinton was born with?
Yeah, well, it is. It's mysterious. And so people say, yeah, well, you know, I don't know what it is, and so I certainly don't know how to get it, right? But actually, part of what this book is about, in fact, all of what this book is about, is that it's not that simple, that you actually can do things differently. You can learn to move through the world in different ways. So that, yes, even if you don't feel like you're born with it, you can adopt and project this quality or qualities, as I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment.
Well,
if you think about it from a bipartisan way, I just want to throw Ronald Reagan into the mix for two reasons. One, that the people on both sides of the political spectrum have this. And two, if you think about both him and Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan was a trained actor and did this for years and years and years, practiced being compelling, practiced connecting emotionally with people. And Bill Clinton really did, too, if you look at his life history and having to navigate some tricky situations as a kid with a really rough situation at home. This is something that you work on and you develop, and you don't get it right all the time necessarily. But if you keep focused on this as an important thing to work on, to develop in the world, you can get better.
Well, I want to talk about these qualities, but since I teased at the top of the hour, what is the most powerful phrase in politics? And we're talking about these two politicians right now. What is the most powerful phrase in politics and why?
You know, that most powerful phrase is something that's been in American politics since the Revolutionary War. It is common sense. And when you think about common sense, there's both a cognitive aspect to it and there's a gut sense to it. A gut sense of it is you see someone and they just seem to have common sense. They get it. They understand the world the way we understand the world. And then there's this common thing, we all share it, and there's just a sense about this person. And so you want to be the candidate of common sense in American politics, at least on the national level. We don't necessarily want the smartest person to be the president. We want the person who understands the way we see the world to be the president, the person who's going to represent our interests and have our back. And so common sense, again, it's been with us for a long time, and every 4 years you'll see people trotting out to say, I'm the candidate of common sense. I get it. I'm the person who really understands the way things are. And if you own the mantle of common sense, you more than likely are going to be more successful than the person who fails to grasp it.
Yeah, the opposite of common sense is out of touch is one way to phrase what that opposite thing is. And all of the studies, there's been a whole lot of work recently about how people make decisions, how people choose between one thing and the other thing. And of course, we're advanced and civilized and very smart as apes go. And we have this fancy prefrontal cortex with lots of, you know, logical neurons and all kinds of good reasoning skills going on. But what the studies show is that most of the time we make our choices based more on emotions, gut level sense, whatever you want to call that, and all of these fancy rational capacities only kick in after the fact to justify the way that we actually feel. So if you want to be in the political realm and convincing people to do what you want them to do and to join you and not the other guy, then really you need to appeal to this sort of irrational, if you will, or emotional sense that you're just their kind of person. We are very tribal creatures. We are herd animals. And if you seem like you have common sense, you're my kind of person, I'm more than likely going to stick with you.
I get it. So let's talk about the qualities that determine our, I guess, our influence and whether we're compelling or not. What are the two qualities that determine how people judge us?
You know, there are two of them. The first is what we call warmth. And when we were just talking about common sense, that's actually a nice segue into warmth. Warmth is the sense that you share the concerns and interests of another person or other people. And so if I want the same things you want, or I see the world the same way you see it, then we feel an affection toward each other, or we're kindred spirits. And warmth is a really primal thing, and it's a very deep, very deep of a feeling that people have, and it happens in two ways. It's so complex and so deep that there have been studies that have shown that if you're literally holding a warm drink in your hands, you'll feel more warmly toward people.
Wow.
I mean, this is cross-cultural, and it works all around the world. I mean, warmth is one of these things that's really, really well understood and very powerful. The other quality that we talk about is strength. strength is not about your physical ability to move large objects. It's about how much you matter, how much you can affect the world. And strength, we talk about it in two ways. We think about the skill you have, how good you are at doing things, how effective you are, and then your will, how much of a force of nature you are, how assertive you are, how much you use your ambition, if you will, to get things done. So you've got the ability to get it done, and you actually have the gumption to take action.
Yeah. So let me understand that that hot beverage thing. If I want to feel warmth toward people, or if I want people to think of me as a warm person, I want to carry that cup of tea around.
Well, so for instance, if you want somebody to like you, right? And let's say you have some, if you're in the same room with them and you were in a position to be able to serve them a drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you gave them hot chocolate, right, and they were holding that, maybe it was actually too hot to drink, and they're holding that hot chocolate in their hands, that's going to make them physically feel warm, and those warm sensations are going to be associated with, in their minds, with being in your presence. And so they're actually going to feel warmer towards you. That's what the studies show. It is not a very strong effect. It does not trump everything else that's going on in our world. But it is a noticeable, it is a measurable effect, which is kind of wild.
So I'm also, then I want to depend on more than just giving them that hot chocolate. I want to do things that will increase my warmth. Is there something I can do?
Yes, you certainly can. Both strength and warmth, we judge through all kinds of different signals. And this is a lot of what the book is about. It's about laying out all the different ways that we judge each other besides the temperature of the beverage that we're holding in our hand. So that's everything from physical characteristics, height and weight and gender and ethnicity and looks, to the way that we carry ourselves. And in fact, the way that we carry ourselves, our demeanor, our nonverbal cues, that is the primary way that we judge each other's character. That's what this strength and warmth judgments, those twin judgments, those twin assessments add up to, is a sense of a judgment of character. Is this person assertive? Are they on my team? Those two things determine how I'm going to emotionally react to somebody. And a lot of that, we figure out where that judgment of character by looking at nonverbals, because what we're doing with our nonverbal signals moment to moment in the world is we are showing anybody who can see us and hear us how we feel at that moment. It's even more so than the words that we're saying, the way that we're holding ourselves, our intonation of our voice, all of those kinds of things are reflecting our internal emotional state pretty accurately as it happens. There's a deep connection between how we feel and these nonverbals. And so that's what we're looking to. On the warmth side, Matt, you want to tick off a couple?
Yeah, I mean, on the warmth side, the number one way we see warmth in people, of course, is smiling. And you know, when someone smiles at us, the old Hallmark card or the Louis Armstrong line is true. When someone smiles at you, you smile inside. You know, and the whole world is smiling. This is actually sort of a biochemical thing. When you see someone smiling at you, you remember what it feels like when you're wearing that expression on your face, and you feel a little warmth inside you. And so smiling is absolutely the most powerful way that we do this. Other ways that we feel warmth toward each other is when you're with somebody, let's say you're having lunch with somebody, and they start to tell you a little confidence, and they lean in a little bit, and you lean in, and you do this automatically when you're with people. Our body language mirrors each other, it mimics each other, and that creates a sense of warmth with each other. This is one of these nonverbal signals that John was talking about, and these things happen all the time, and we're not even aware of them, but when you actually have some presence of mind about them, then you see them in action, and you notice that they work, and they actually create more warmth if you have a little bit of awareness of them.
We are talking about how we can be more persuasive and influential with the people in our lives. We are talking with the co-authors of a new book, It's compelling people, the hidden qualities that make us influential. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So what do you think makes a person influential? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the co-authors of the book Compelling People, The Hidden Qualities That Make Us Influential. We are happy to have with us Matthew Kohut and Jeff Neffinger, and we welcome your input. We welcome your questions for them about how we can be more compelling, how we can be more influential. We talked a little bit about how we can improve or increase our warmth, because our warmth and our strength are the qualities that people judge us on the most or first. Do we need different levels of warmth and strength in different contexts?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And there are, in terms of what we're projecting, there are definitely situations that call for a lot more warmth. And there are definitely situations that call for a lot more strength. If you're dealing with somebody who's trying to, you know, steamroll you, basically trying to get something out of you, they are maybe testing your strength a little bit. They think they can get away with stuff, and so projecting a little bit more strength in that moment to say, "No, I'm actually not a pushover. I'm not a wallflower. I am assertive. And if you're going to try and pull whatever it is you're trying to pull, you're going to have to deal with me." That's a moment where you want to dial up the strength. And so there are a whole bunch of nonverbal ways you can do that. Matt talked before the break a little bit about the nonverbal ways to project warmth. The A number one nonverbal way to project strength is in posture. Just like you see in the military, you're standing at attention. That's a little bit exaggerated for civilian purposes. But to occupy your full height, to use the muscles in your torso to straighten out the S-curve in your spine so that you carry yourself in a way that says, I am here to be taken account of. It's very interesting. We have in the back of our brain something called the occipital lobe, which is a large region of the brain that processes visual signals. And we can tell from a long way away the difference between somebody who's standing up straight and somebody who's not. And when we see somebody standing up really straight, we know that they mean business on this kind of primal level. And so asserting that strength, especially when you're being challenged, is a very handy thing to do.
We're talking much of this advice about warmth and strength is about these external traits or behaviors. So what if we're not internally very warm or very strong? Can we actually make up for that?
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that, because it turns out that if we take on these external traits, particularly with strength, we can sort of, our brains will catch up with us. So here's the example. A friend of ours named Amy Cuddy at Harvard Business School did this study with a woman named Dana Carney, who's now at Berkeley, and a guy named Eric Yap, where they had people engage in what they called power poses, where they had people essentially take up a lot of space. One of the poses they had people do was what they called the Wonder Woman, where people put their hands on their hips and were very assertive. We actually have been using this in our coaching methods with people, where we say, you know, imagine you won the lottery, threw your hands over your head and said, yeah, how you would feel, you know, or your team just won the World Series or the World Cup or whatever gets you excited. And when you take up a lot of space like that, when you stretch across your chest and your upper torso region there, and hold that pose for about 90 seconds, 2 minutes, you actually get a biochemical reaction. This is fascinating. They did blood tests on people, and they found that they had elevated levels of testosterone that made people feel more confident. That's both men and women. And they also had lowered levels of cortisol. That is your stress hormone. That's the thing that makes you feel the butterflies, that sort of bad feeling that you want to get away from. So actually, what this study found is that you can sort of make yourself feel more confident by putting yourself in a confident pose. And this kind of comports with why the military teaches people to stand up tall and straight. It actually becomes the way you feel about yourself.
Yeah, when we're doing our this gets to the actual issue of coaching, how we work with people. Like you were talking before, Joy, about can you actually do this differently? And there is a degree to which, with the strength, you can kind of fake it. And faking it will actually, not only will it project what you want to project, but it'll actually make you feel on the inside stronger too. And that actually works pretty well. You can do some of that with warmth, but warmth is much harder to fake. If you don't genuinely feel empathy with somebody, there are just a whole bunch of little signals that we are very, very attuned to. If you've ever seen someone fake a smile, right? Not fake in a mean way, not in a deceptive way, but just kind of a polite smile. The difference between a polite smile and a real smile, if you actually sat those two pictures in front of you, it would take you a while to figure out what exactly was different between the two, but you instantly know in your gut which one's fake and which one's real, because we're very precise and very able to discern these two different kinds of emotions. So go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, so if we're looking at these photos, we somehow don't like the fake smile, or don't like or trust that person more than the one who has a genuine smile.
You don't believe it. There are social circles in this country where if you are out in public, even if you're not feeling good, even if you're totally down, the thing that you are required to do to be polite, just like opening the door for somebody, is to wear a quote-unquote smile on your face. And so in those circles, with that social expectation, people understand that you're not trying to be deceptive. You're just trying to be nice, even though you don't feel good. But nobody is fooled at all.
Well, now I'm going to be self-conscious about my polite smile, and I'm not going to portray enough strength.
Yeah. Well, and so what you're saying there, actually, you just touched on the real kind of the rub of the story, if you will, which is that there is this trade-off between the two. And it's not that you can't do both at once, but it is tricky to do both at once. And it's mostly because of this point we've been making, that we judge people's internal emotional states. That's where we judge their character. And we see it through their nonverbals. And nonverbally, pretty much anything that you do to display more strength and project more strength makes you seem like maybe slightly more of a jerk. Whereas anything that you do to be more warm and happy and friendly can also make you seem like more of a pushover. So that trade-off gets really tricky.
Let me welcome in a callers to our conversation. We have full lines. We are talking with the co-authors of Compelling People, The Hidden Qualities That Make Us Influential. And our first caller is John in Madison. Hello, John.
Hi. Well, Professor Cialdini wrote Influence. I'm sure both you guys have read it, where he lists six principles that are hardwired in every one of us. And if you want to be persuasive and get an automatic response, you adhere to them. And he elaborated on this with Goldstein and Martin and Yes, which was a big bestseller. And what I've heard so far is warmth appears to fit into the hardwired area of likability, and strength into the hardwired principle of authority. The other ones are consistency, reciprocity, social validation, and scarcity. What I'm wondering is, have you guys added to this list, or are you mainly developing some of these other principles?
You can pretty much map the Cialdini qualities to strength and warmth, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, they absolutely do map it. So this is not like adding another two, seven and eight to his list of six. What we're talking about are the two ways, in some sense it's operating at a different level. It's totally consistent with what Cialdini is saying. So Cialdini is saying, here are six things that you can do that are going to be levers that you can pull to get people sort of on your side. These are the two characteristics, the two criteria by which we're judging the character of a particular person. And those do absolutely go to persuasiveness. So, for instance, if you want to trace the sort of academic history of this, you go back to the founding paper in the Academic Study of Communications, And they point to two particular qualities that a speaker must have to be persuasive. They must, on the one hand, be perceived to be expert, to know what the heck they're talking about, to know how the world works, and that maps with strength. And then, on the other hand, they must be perceived to be sympathetic to the audience, so they're not trying to trick you. And that, again, maps to warmth, to being on your side. Reciprocity, actually, in particular, I want to call out since you mentioned this. This is one of the things that this one of Cialdini's big six, and that's a big one in terms of how warmth works. Because if you, when you get to this idea, we were talking before about this phrase common sense, but that's something, if you're associated with common sense, that's going to be good for you in politics. If you are looking to persuade someone verbally of something, you want to change their mind about something, and you know that you have a disagreement between you, the two of you, and you want to pull them over to your side, the natural thing to do is to highlight that disagreement, is to say, that, you know, here's where you're wrong, basically. And within a context of a relationship of trust, where people already do have some warm feelings towards one another, that can be fine, right? You don't have to go on a big, long explanation. But when you're dealing in a different context with somebody who's maybe, you know, not 100% on your side, or maybe feels like they're 100% on the other side, then what's really powerful to do is to find something that they already agree, that they already feel that you can agree with. And so you begin by agreeing with them about something, and you do it wholeheartedly. You have to find something that you genuinely can be on their side about. And what that does is that sets up this reciprocity where, okay, if this person's agreeing with me, the natural thing to do back is maybe to be listening to what they're saying next and see if I can agree with them too.
Let me take another caller. Fred in Minong is with us now. Hello, Fred.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. I'll just say a couple of things that I think make a good speaker or don't make a good speaker. Personally, myself, I'm 80 years old, and I all my life have found it difficult to stand in front of a large group of people and speak. One or two, I mean, I would shake, my knees would knock, and but for one or two people to talk to, I could talk your ears off. But to me, a speech maker has to show self-confidence and be believable, first off. And usually they're people that rise to challenges in their life, and they seem to assume that you are already interested in what they are saying, and their words seem to flow. They have a good personality. They don't speak with a lot of ands and ers or ahs or hesitations such as that, or come up with this modern-day term, it's like this and like that, because that just drives me crazy. And I think that they speak at the listener's level, not over their head. I'll just hang up and listen to any comments. Thank
Fred,
you.
I want to compliment you on your public speaking. You just did public speaking there to a lot of people. Anyway, well, what about what he had to say, Matt?
You know, Fred, actually, you said something. The very first thing you said was a good public speaker is confident and believable. And in our world, that means that person is projecting strength. Confidence is the byproduct of strength. When you feel strong, you look confident. You look relaxed, like you belong. You are where you belong to be. And believable absolutely goes to this idea of trust. Because if somebody seems to share your interests, share your concerns, they seem like your kind of person, well, hey, they're warm. And so the very first two things you said was, I'm looking for a public speaker who is, in a way, strong, showing me their strength and showing me their warmth. And we all want public speakers who show us these things. I mean, there's so much research that backs up this idea that what we're looking for from people is that they're showing us both of these qualities. We really respond favorably to people like that. And, you know, one of the things we haven't mentioned today is the emotions we feel when we see both of these things in a person. And John was saying it's tricky because there's this tension between these two things. And when we see both, we admire people. And that's that feeling we get when we see someone give a rousing speech and they've shown us their passion and their confidence. We really admire that.
Yeah, Fred also said he doesn't like it when speakers talk over his head. That would be warmth as well, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. Projecting that you're essentially that you're not on the same page with them. You're not their kind of person. You're putting on airs, I guess, would be one way to say it.
And the ums and verbal crutches, maybe that exudes that you're not strong enough.
Well, so there's a really interesting, there's one other really interesting thing that jumped out at me about what Fred said. You know, he talked about how it makes him nervous to speak in front of a lot of people. And there's actually a very good reason why that makes us nervous. When we stand up in front of a lot of people, a lot of people beat themselves up for that. They think they're, you know, there's something wrong with them, or they're cowards or something that they can't. Well, I can speak so well in front of three people. What's wrong with me that I can't do it in front of 10 or 20? And if you think about it, though, what happens is, Joy, if you and I were actually face-to-face and we were having a conversation, then if you were speaking to me, you would be looking for me to be nodding my head and saying, mm-hmm, and making eye contact, and maybe my facial expressions would be reacting to what you're saying. All of those things are what we look for when we're having conversations with each other that say that we're understanding things, that we're communicating okay. If you're not getting that, if you're talking to someone and you're getting a blank stare back, then you start to get this knot in your stomach, like something is not right here. This person doesn't like me. They're not hearing me. They don't speak English. This communication is not working. And what happens when you go from speaking to three people to speaking to 30, those 30 people in the audience, they know that they are not on the hook for the other half of this conversation, that they are essentially just watching TV. Mm-hmm. And so they stop giving you that nonverbal feedback. And so now, instead of one blank face, you're now staring at a sea of blank faces. And so the knot in your stomach gets really big. But really, it's not that they don't like what you're saying. It's not that they don't agree with you. It's not that they're not appreciating it. It's just that, as far as they're concerned, they're watching television. And nobody watches television nodding along the screen, no matter how much they like the show. So there's this weird dynamic there that then, for us, it just makes you nervous because you feel like you're being judged harshly, but really everybody's just kind of gone into receive mode. Once you understand that, that's kind of a first step towards getting beyond that and being able to communicate with people the way that they like, which is actually the same way that they like one-on-one. They like the sense, if you're communicating with them like you were having an intimate conversation, that's going to feel great for them, even if they're not giving you any nonverbal feedback back.
We are talking about what makes us influential and how we can learn how to be more influential. We are talking with the co-authors of the book, Compelling People, The Hidden Qualities That Make Us Influential. We welcome your questions and comments and experiences for our two guests, the co-authors of this book, Matthew Kohut and John Neffinger, co-founders of KNP Communications, which specializes in preparing speakers to high-stakes audiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, we wonder if you think you are a compelling or influential person, or if you know someone who is. What do you think the traits, the qualities are of someone who is influential? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Tom in Cedarburg next. Hello, Tom.
Morning, Joy. What an interesting subject you have now, and what interesting guests. I'm just a blue collar person, and I'm kind of a quiet person and a shy person, but yet I do talk to many different types of people from all walks of life, and you know, from the, I guess you could talk, you know, say just a regular lower level person to somewhat higher level people too. And I in many ways, I view people the same in that they all have strengths and weaknesses, and they all have importance, some more than others, obviously. But even the regular person has importance, and that they appreciate being listened to, and not just in a fake way, and then being just, you know, blown off or shoved aside. I'm Irish, so at times I do have a sense of humor, not all the time, but I like When I talk with people, I just don't look at them, you know, staring at them, you know, intently, but, you know, I may look to the side, but, it may be, you know, like in a way of actually still listening. And I like to, like if I'm one-on-one, it's especially good to be able to say, walk with somebody and you're both looking ahead. So you're not concentrating on looking at each other, you know, all the time, unless something's really important. And sometimes that makes things at a more, easier level to talk, I find.
Tom, I don't want to necessarily not give you enough time to make your whole point, since that is something that you think is important and you try to do, but we do have limited time. What about the importance of being a good listener, Matt or John?
Yeah, you know, Tom, this question of being a good listener and taking and being genuine with people, that's really about warmth. It sounds like you actually have a lot of warmth in the way you relate to people, and the fact that you want to be respectful toward people and you want people to relate to you on a level where it's not just something where they're kind of looking past you. It's a genuine, authentic, emotional connection. And, you know, everybody does this a little bit differently. And for some people, eye contact is a little harder than others. And maybe the way that you show that you're listening is you're kind of nodding along with somebody, even if you're not 100% comfortable making full eye contact with them, just because it doesn't come naturally to you. And you know, you mentioned walking with people. That can be a great way to build rapport with people. And you know, in our world, that's warmth. And it's a way of expressing. Everyone expresses this stuff differently. And it sounds like you found some good strategies for doing that. And you know, one of the things we talk about in the book is just thinking about the ways that you do these things. And we offer a few ideas for ways to expand your vocabulary, expand your tool set, if you will, for these kinds of things. But it's not, you know, everybody finds their own ways to do it. It sounds like you, I mean, walking is a great one. I'm so glad you mentioned that because it's one of my favorite ones, actually. It's a great way to build rapport with people.
Well, and the book goes through a lot of different ways to project warmth with people. But if you want to project warmth with a certain person, what we would not say is, okay, take this whole long list of warmth signals that we've talked about in the book and do them all and just, you know, pile them on top of one another and go and show more warmth. You can easily, if you're just trying to be too warm, too much, what will happen is you will seem overeager. You will definitely tank whatever strength you could otherwise project. And you might not even seem warm because everybody, warmth is a two-way street. Warmth is about connecting two people. It's not just about one thing that gets broadcast into the universe. And so if you're, you know, different people operate in the world different ways. We have extroverts who are, you know, bounding through the world like Tigger and, you know, want to talk to everybody. And we have introverts who are more thoughtful and interact with the world in a different way and have done fantastic things in the world. And that is not a handicap at all, even if some situations are slightly less comfortable. And so what you want to do is you want to figure out where that person that you're trying to connect with is. And showing warmth to them is about meeting them where they are, not about, you know, over-loving them with all kinds of smiling and excited behavior.
So can you share a couple of the tools in the tool set?
Sure, sure. Well, so we talked about smiling for one, and we spent a lot of time thinking and looking at what happens at the front of the room. And so it's things like really strange things in some cases, like wrist angle. Like, what? How are you holding your hands here? And it turns out that holding your hands at one wrist angle versus another wrist angle projects a very different thing to the people who are looking at you.
So now I have both of them. I'm sort of, I have them both toward the corners of the room, my hands. What does that mean?
Okay, yeah, let's do this. Okay, so imagine you're holding a basketball, okay? So imagine you're holding a basketball and, like, say in front of your belly button or so, just a little bit in front of you there, you're just holding it. If you have your hands at facing each other, palms facing each other at 9 and 3 on the clock face, if you think about it that way, if you were to shake that basketball, that invisible basketball, while you're talking to somebody, that's a relatively strong gesture.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might even, if you close your fingers up and then you're shaking that basketball, you have kind of your hands are two blades, and now you're doing a kind of a double karate chop gesture. It's very strong. If instead you rotate your hands, so now maybe it's not a basketball. Now you're holding a tray of food, and so you're holding it from below with both of your hands, with your palms facing up. Now that's a very warm gesture. You're offering someone a gift. You're accepting someone in. You're showing them your palms, so you're showing them you're unarmed, which was a bigger deal a few hundred years ago, I think. But that's the kind of, if you see a portrait of Jesus on, you know, giving the Sermon on the Mount, oftentimes his palms are painted facing up in this very warm, open, welcoming gesture. If, on the other hand, go back to your basketball and now put your hands on sort of towards the top of the basketball, which would actually make it kind of hard to hold, that's a very dominant thing. Now you're pushing someone down or choking someone. And so when you're gesturing in the world, if you're feeling warm, what we find is that most of the time we're going to naturally have our palms facing up. But sometimes people have different habits or they've picked up different things along the way. And so even when they're trying to project warmth, their hands will be saying something different. And so that's when it's helpful to actually watch video of yourself and talk through this stuff and feel around with your muscles and try and do something a little differently so that you actually achieve the effect that you're trying to communicate to the world.
Hey, what about Bill Clinton's famous, he had kind of a fist with his thumb up, you know, what he would make a point doing that?
You know, that's funny. I'm laughing because, you know, Bill Clinton is arguably the best living public speaker in American politics. But this is the one thing we have a little beef with Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah. No, we do not like this.
Because if you look at that thing he's doing, we were all taught as kids that it's not polite to point at people. And so what we've sort of surmised that Bill Clinton did, and we, you know, apparently he learned this from watching film of JFK.
Yes. JFK did this. So he did get it, honestly, from there. Yeah.
So what Bill Clinton, you know, and JFK did is they folded their index finger in under the thumb, and they just kind of pointed the thumb at people. But if you look at the nonverbal signal you're sending people, it kind of looks like you're changing the channel. And that's not the signal you want to tell people, is turn to another channel here. So what we suggest to people is rather than folding that index finger in so you're not pointing, just unfold the other fingers and use an open-handed gesture. It's much more natural. It occurs in nature. This thing where you have your thumb pointing at someone, it looks like you were trained to be a politician, essentially. And anyone who sees it says, oh, you were coached to be a politician or some sort of political hack.
Bad news. Normal.
We have another caller. Fred in Palmyra is waiting. Hi, Fred.
Hey, good morning. Tom covered one of my points about being a good listener. It occurred to me after a guy had said I was interesting that I hadn't really said all that much. I was just listening to him. The other point was that once I was, I'm kind of on the low end of the ladder too. I work in the school district, but an administrator once said to me that he said, I didn't know how to take you at first. You're so direct. Could you comment on that?
Sure. Sorry. Go ahead, John.
No.
I was going to say, being direct is oftentimes associated with strength. And when somebody is very direct and they're blunt, that oftentimes goes to this idea I was just talking about, or how strength has a component of will or forcefulness to it. And so some people will interpret that as being a show of assertiveness. On the other hand, with certain people, if you're direct, certain people see that in you and that actually builds trust in them. It's very subjective how we interpret that stuff. But with some people, it's interesting when you mentioned, you know, that this person thought, well, I wasn't sure what to make of you. So it sounds like they were still determining if you were their kind of people or not. Other people, when they meet someone who's very direct, if they're very direct, they say, hey, you're my kind of person. So this can happen sometimes where somebody sees a bird of a feather. You're direct, I'm direct, we like each other. I talk the same way as you do. Whereas with other folks, if you're very direct and you seem to have a lot of strength, they may still be trying to figure out if you see the world the same way they do, if you share their interests, if you're their kind of person.
Go ahead. Finish your thought. I was just going to say that there are different social expectations. in different settings around this stuff. And sometimes it's very regional, right? And so the expectation, or at least the stereotype of New Yorkers, is that they're direct. And so some people will say that they are rude, but if you ask a New Yorker, the New Yorker will say, well, you know where I stand. You always know where I stand. And that, for them, that's an issue of trust. And so that is projecting more from their point of view.
Do you expect the title of your book to be pronounced compelling people or compelling people?
It's a great question. It's a little bit of a double meaning there, I think. I think we try to think of it as a positive thing in both ways. We're definitely, I think, I don't know, what would you say, Matt? What's the first meaning?
I think the first meaning is people who are compelling to us.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, people.
But it has that other meaning in there too, Joy. You're
yeah,
totally right.
It just occurred to us that it could be said different ways. I'm going to throw you guys a curveball. I'm just curious with we've been talking a little bit of politics and politicians. What do you think about our leaders today in Washington? Is Barack Obama doing a good job of conveying strength and warmth, or John Boehner? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned John Boehner. I just wrote a blog post about this the other day for a publication called Medium. You can find it online. And Boehner is in a bad spot. You know, we talk about strength and warmth. Right now, there's a sense that he's not getting the job done. That's the strength side. And that he's not representing either his caucus's interests or the interests of the American people. I mean, you look at the polls of Republican Party, and they're at the lowest they've ever been. So John Boehner himself is kind of the emblematic, he's the symbol of the lack of strength and lack of warmth. He's kind of between the rock and the hard place here.
Yeah, he's kind of 0-for-2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ted Cruz, on the other hand, though a lot of people are not finding him terribly warm, he seems to not necessarily have the country's best interest at heart for a lot of people, and obviously there's a big divide in this depending on where you are on the political spectrum. But he does seem to be projecting a fair amount of strength. So, like him or not, he seems to be pulling a lot of strings for a freshman senator in Washington and driving a lot of the debate. So he will come off as strong kind of no matter where you are. Obama is an interesting study. When people talk about Obama being charismatic in both, the first thing that comes to mind for us a lot is which one, because Michelle actually does a fantastic job a lot of the time at projecting both strength and warmth. She had a little bit of a rough start, but seems to have grown into the role pretty nicely. Barack has his moments where he really is firing on all cylinders, and these tend to come during the campaign. While he's actually governing, though, oftentimes he'll come out, you know, for a press conference or an interview, and he will just seem kind of grouchy. He will not seem like he's having particularly out of fun. He seemed like he's annoyed by the challenges that come with the job.
And I'm going to have to jump in. I'm sorry to say, I probably should have started with this question. It's really interesting. We're out of time.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for having us. We really enjoyed it.
We had learned a lot with John Neffinger and Matthew Kohut.